Apple has agreed to a $95 million settlement for the Siri eavesdropping lawsuit. The tech giant was accused of using Siri to record conversations through iPhones and other devices equipped with virtual assistant. If the settlement is approved, this means that tens of millions of people who owned Apple devices anywhere between 2014 and last year could possibly file a claim.
What's up, you hooligans? You privacy hooligans.
A hooligan is a person who behaves in a rowdy, violent, or unlawful way, often in a group or gang. Hooligans are often associated with crowds at sporting events, but anyone who acts in a disruptive or obnoxious way could be considered a hooligan.
What's up, you privacy hooligans? How's it going? It's Simon back with another episode, episode 41 of the Closed Network Privacy Security Podcast, recorded live because I'm live, but it's like as pre-recorded. I don't know why I think that's funny, but I do. Hope everyone's doing well. Happy New Year. Today is January 7th, 2025. Happy New Year, everybody. Hope you are in good health. I hope you had a great holiday season for those that do the holiday stuff. Had a great new year. Hopefully got to spend some time with family or friends and didn't get zapped by the feds. So I kind of wanted to check in with some changes and updates that I'm making personally for some of my setup and run through a couple other stories. As you heard the clip about Apple being not really, there's a lot of articles around this lawsuit's been going on for quite a few years, so I was just going to touch on that. But on this episode, I'm going to talk about my new 2025 plan for my own implementations and what I'm working on for my technology, my Graphene OS setup, which I have changed ever since the move from Android 14 to 15. So I'm going to talk about how I've got that set up or how I'm setting it up because it is taking a while. And any other changes that I'm working on, at least at the moment. XMR, also known as Monero, so maybe an accumulation strategy, where you can use it, how you can get some, what I use it for in purchases. So I'm going to talk about that. There is a new travel rule that's going into effect in the EU. For cryptocurrency, specifically like Bitcoin, and I think primarily Bitcoin, but it might relate to other cryptocurrencies beyond that. I'm not totally sure. I'm going to touch on that as well. AT&T and Verizon say their networks are secure from Salt Typhoon, which has been a big deal, at least in the United States. There's been a lot of telco providers, telephone service providers that have been dealing with this breach of having Salt Typhoon in their networks for Lord knows how long. So we'll touch on that in a little bit, what's going on there. Safing.io and IVPN are joining forces. So I'm going to talk about that as well, what that means. And if we get time, I'm going to touch on Discord, the COSA updates, which is the Kids Online Safety Act updates, what they're trying to achieve with that, where that's at right now. I'm going to refer to Section 108 specifically within this episode. And there's also a very good video, too, that I'll have posted in the show notes that some ordinary gamers posted that I thought was really good, a really good breakdown. So that's what I'm going to be discussing, talking about on this episode. For those who are new to the show, we do have some resources online. If this is your first time listening, You can go to closednetwork.io, pretty much get to all of these places that I mention or talk about through the podcast, different episodes that talk about our Matrix channels and our forum and things of that nature, Mastodon server. Also, if you want to connect with myself or some of our moderators, we're on Mastodon as well as Noster. So give a big shout out to the supporters of the show. The show is pretty much 100, not pretty much, it is 100% supported by myself and by you all, the producers of the show, adopting the value for value model from the very beginning, which is not a model I created. It's one that was adopted, that I adopted from No Agenda. Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak, longtime listener of the No Agenda podcast, but Adam Curry has also been heavily involved in he's the original podfather, if you will. And he's also been heavily involved with the value for value model being implemented into podcasting 2.0, which allows users to download podcast 2.0 apps, load up wallets if they choose to, with sats or satoshis, denominations, small denominations of Bitcoin, and transfer value directly to their favorite creators, whether it's a podcaster or a musician on Wavelake. Noster is built on this, which is a decentralized kind of social media platform, but it's a protocol. It's not really a platform. So when I mention things like value for value, it's direct value. So I receive direct value from you all, and I hope you get value back from the efforts that I put in, as well as some of the contributors within our community. So I just want to say thank you to Michael Bates, Richard G., Daniel J. Martin, D New, New is the D silent, all privacy badasses on the Patreon, as well as Timothy Kelly and Hutch, the privacy advocates. Really appreciate the support. Hoping one day, maybe one day, I'll be able to be a full-time podcaster too, or content creator. So in the meantime, I have a business, I have a company, I have a day job that I've been really busy with, and I'm grateful for the work that I have, but I do one day dream to be a full-time meme lord, trollster. That would be awesome. So thank you to the supporters, Patreon supporters, Michael Bates, Richard G., Daniel J. Martin, and D. New, Timothy Kelly, Hutch, as well as our lightning boosters, Bond, Wartime, and The Bird, coming in with all your hot sats coming through the protocols. Much, much appreciated. And I also want to say thank you to Unintelligent 7 and Maddest Max for all their help and moderating all of the chat rooms, the forum, and helping run servers and things of that nature. When I say server, we have a forum, we have a Mastodon server. So there's, you know, web server, there's infrastructure and DNS and backups and things that just need to be tend to. So I really appreciate all the help and welcoming that they do for new people coming in. If you want to check out the chat rooms, you can download a Matrix client. We usually suggest Element. You can just download the Element app. It's on every device or even just through the web. Then you can go to just create an account, use an email alias, put those practices into play. We always talk about using email aliases and aliasing your identity. And you can register an account, go to closednetwork.io and just click join the room. There's two. There's a main room, and there's also an off topic, which is pretty much where all the meme lords hang out, all the privacy junkies, where we post all of our dank memes and have a good time in there. So you can follow me directly on Noster as well as Mastodon. I do hang out on X. I'm not one of those people that's deleted my account yet, because I do get a lot of information from Twitter / X, whatever it goes by. These days, I think it's just X, right? So if you want to follow me on any of those places, all of that information will be in the show notes. I will also have a link to the show notes in a URL-friendly manner posted on our forum. You're also welcome to ask questions by posting comments on the forum and make suggestions for upcoming shows, topics, and things of that nature. So Yeah. Someone actually gave me a lot of grief for the long-winded introductions that I make. And I'm just going to take a moment to say, look, I know that the introductions can sometimes be a little long. The intro to the podcast can be a little long, but it's either that or I can just monetize the podcast with ads and play those instead. So I don't think everyone always understands the reason why I do the intro the way I do and give the props in the very beginning is A, I usually try to say everything I'm going to talk about on the podcast before I do anything else. I don't always do it, but I try. That way, if it's not of interest to you, you can eject right from the beginning and I don't waste any of your time. But if you're going to hang out for the podcast, I do this podcast, one, because I enjoy doing it, but two, because we have such an awesome community. And honestly, that has kept me going. That's what the reason why I feel compelled to keep doing it is because I enjoy it. But it's the camaraderie, and it's important that those people get recognition who are supporting the podcast, who are contributing, who the producers of the show, because it's not just me. I'm not a one-man band, okay? There's a lot of people involved making this happen. And so if it wasn't for that, there would be no show. And yes, there's other things people do, like sell books and sell services, and I really have no interest in selling you anything ever. Doesn't mean we won't ever sell merch or sell products and things, but that would not be the focus of, amassing a listener audience. I don't want to monetize you ever. I don't even want to know your name. And when I say that, I mean it in a loving way because we really promote being private, being anonymous when you want to. It doesn't mean you need to be invisible all the time, and I'm going to talk a little bit about that as well in just a second. But my point is that we're kind of a very cool, laid back, open group. Sometimes things from once in a while can get a little interesting and a little hot, but generally speaking, everyone's very respectful and kind, and that's just what we like. We're just kind of a laid back hippie bar. And when I say hippie, I don't mean like dirty hippies. I mean like executive hippies, right? Sometimes we like our scotch and whiskeys. So having said that, I just really appreciate the community. We have how many people? I mean, it always blows my mind, 305 people in the Matrix chat. Do you know how crazy that is? That there's a ton of listeners, right? But how many people, what percentage of people will go out of their way to actually go download some weird app called Element, create a Matrix Matrix account and try to join a chat room, which is just text-based. It's kind of a new version of IRC. Not many people. So the ones that do, we have a great time. We also have a SimpleX chat group. Things are getting a little weird for me with SimpleX right now, but I'm trying to not overreact. There's a lot of changes that are being proposed with SimpleX through the GitHub developer notes that we've been kind of keeping up with in the SimpleX group chat that we have going on. And it's under the... they're trying to combat potentially having issues with CSAM or people sharing content that should not be shared or that's illegal, though I'm totally, for especially kids, right? A lot of times when I say things, people like I've actually received comments that say, well, sometimes it's worth giving up some freedoms if we're protecting children. And usually, though, that's always the smoke screen is to protect the children. That should be the trigger that something is up. And anyways, they're trying to figure out how they can do reporting and delete groups and things of that nature in SimpleX. But fundamentally, that kind of goes against like the whole decentralized concept, because my thought process and what we've seen in the past is, well, if you are okay with one thing, then the next thing and the next thing and the next thing comes out. So before you know it, people are reporting each other for offensive memes or language or other things that are not illegal. They're just free speech. And I'm not totally sure how things are going to play out with the SimpleX saga. I'm not even going to... it was kind of unintentional for me to bring that up. But we do have a SimpleX chat group because a lot of us were kind of thinking maybe that could be the next... application or tool that we use. moving forward with friends and family or online personalities, because you can have on the fly anonymous profiles that are kind of throwaway, and you can have dedicated ones. And it's really cool. And I really enjoy using the application and having different profiles and having that compartmentalization. But I kind of wonder how things will be in another year or two as they roll out more changes. So still use Signal in the meantime. So speaking about Signal, I wanted to talk about how I've been changing up my primary and secondary device. So for those that have never listened to my setup, I have a Pixel, actually a few Pixels, running Graphene OS. And for, for the last couple of years, I've been running multiple devices to compartmentalize different activities and keep them separated from each other. So my primary device, I have kind of used the owner profile as my own daily driver. And I knew I wanted to change that and move into using the multiple user accounts. But I didn't exactly, it's kind of a pain, right, to redo your phone and back things up and move things around. And it's also good to wipe and reload every once in a while. I'm not saying you need to do that. It's just something I do like once a year or sometimes every 2 years, whether it's a desktop computer running Linux or Mac or in the past Windows. It's sometimes I just like a fresh start, and it also helps me kind of declutter and nuke a lot of things off of my hardware that are no longer relevant, old data that's sitting around, applications that aren't being used, and I get a little bit more focused based on what I'm trying to accomplish with that device. So I did that this week. It's been kind of, since last week, it's been kind of a pain. And I'm also experimenting with my work device on Graphene OS as well, which is presenting some challenges, as I knew it would. But currently my work phone and my work environment items, my electronic devices, have Apple logos on them. And they have for years. I've been working in the media and marketing space for the last 15 years, okay? And I've always used Apple products. So Macs, iPhones, iPads. And part of that is because a lot of the other creative people that I work with, I call them creative because they're illustrators, writers, videographers, photographers, anything to do with creating content for the web or in the real world for outdoor media like billboards and things like that. These creative types generally all use Apple products as well. So it's always just made my life easier, not to mention for a lot of video editing I do with other video editors and videographers, collaborating use tools like Frame.io, which integrate really well with Adobe Premiere or Final Cut Pro or DaVinci Resolve on Mac for being able to comment and edit on clips before we get to a final product or before we, you know, in order to get a sign off from a client on a video project, things of that nature. So long story short, these types of activities in a business environment are really challenging to do on devices that are optimized for your privacy and security, number one. And so that's where the challenge has been for me personally, is getting my work device moved over to a Pixel with Graphene OS. But I'm trying. And I'm kind of glad I'm going through this process because it's also providing some benefits for me. So I'll give you an example. One function I do on one of my iPhones, yes, because I have a couple different iPhones because I have different customer accounts for different social media profiles for posting their social media stuff, primarily videos. A lot of it's like YouTube, could be Instagram, could be TikTok, could be something else. So I have like literally dedicated devices sitting on my desk to be able, and I'm already logged in and have all the authentication for everything. So workflow might be I'm collaborating on a video, we get sign off, I'll export it out, I'll airdrop it to the phone, and then I can post it to their social media, or I can schedule it, or I can send it somewhere else. So those types of tasks can be very challenging. Doesn't mean it's impossible. I do use Local Send a lot. Local Send is an open source free application, which you can install on any device. And it kind of, it gives you the ability to have AirDrop, but those devices do have to be on the same Wi-Fi network. But the nice thing is it transfers the full resolution media. So if you're doing graphics and things like that, you can easily send that back and forth. You can also copy and paste text and other things. So that actually does streamline my life quite a bit nicely, because sometimes I want to move something from my work machine, which is running on a Mac, to one of my Linux machines, which are like personal devices. Though I don't let them usually co-mingle. I even have different VLANs set up for work and personal devices. It gets pretty crazy, right? Because when you go down this rabbit hole, you start figuring out how you want to isolate everything. Okay, so isolation. Let's get back to the Pixel with Graphene OS. I was inspired from watching a video that our friend Josh, who runs the Site of Burritos YouTube channel, and Asterisk also started a podcast in the last few months called In the Shell, which is fantastic. I highly recommend. Digestible 10 to 15 minute episodes going into like viruses and malware and Trojans and things. Really, really cool. Check out his podcast. But Josh has done a lot of videos about Graphene OS, both on the phone, on the tablet as well. And I went back and I was watching one of his videos a couple weeks ago, and he put it out like 3 months ago on how he did his setup. And I'm like, boom, a light bulb went off, which was to use the owner profile, actually set everything up in the owner profile with the apps that I want, but disable all the apps. So that's what I did. I set up a new, wiped it, cleaned that off, right? This is a Pixel 9 Pro XL with a 512 gigabyte storage space, because I got to store a lot of media. So I basically wiped it, installed Graphene OS fresh. And in the owner profile, by the way, I do this without any SIM card in it or anything first. I just set up the phone. You can use a SIM card if you want, but anyways, I set everything up in the owner profile that I want. So I try to install all the applications through Obtainium that are open source. Sometimes I have some problems with that, getting the package to pull from like GitHub or something. I don't know why, like OpenPods, which is a open source application to use your AirPods on your Pixel on Graphene OS, I couldn't install it from GitHub. So I did end up installing FDroid as well, and it installed fine from there. But I also set up the applications and installed Google Play services, went ahead and installed everything that I knew I would need in different profiles in the owner profile. Go through and disable all the apps. In Josh's video, he actually installed Orbot first, activated the full device VPN, and then ran selected his exit node for the US, and then launched Google Play services to go install applications. And I would recommend that. I had problems with it, though. I don't know if it's just the way the wind blows. He's also in the United States. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So what I ended up doing was putting Mulvad VPN on there and running that in the owner profile, just so that Google Play store would connect at least to the VPN and not use like my home IP address. Probably would be better to use the Tor option. I just, for whatever reason, no matter what I did, I tried restarting it, selecting the exit nodes in US like multiple times and letting it restart. And then, you know, I had quit the apps, right? So you swipe up, you know, and then swipe the app gone, or you could just right click or press down on the app, go to app info and click force stop on Google Play. So it was definitely shut down, not running. Turn Orbot on, full device VPN, could not get Google Play services to load. So couldn't quite do it exactly the way Josh did, but I still was able to install all the apps I wanted. And after I installed each app, I disabled it. The reason I do that is so that when I'm in the owner profile, I don't accidentally open up applications, because I don't really want to run anything in the owner profile. Okay. So then I go and set up all my, you know, go into the system settings, activate, you know, go to users, and I start setting up different users. So once I set up the users, and I'm kind of trying something different. Like in the past, I've had like a junk account, a junk user profile. I had a social media one, and then I had like a primary, but things got kind of wonky. So because I have the opportunity to do it all over again, fresh, I am isolating my like online identities into these different user profiles. And now you can fast switch between these profiles. They're isolated from each other. And my goal, my thought is that for my work phone with a Pixel, I could set up each user profile for some of the clients that we directly manage some of their media and their social media uploads for. And I was thinking, that'd be kind of cool because I don't mind installing Instagram and all that stuff. Again, this is a work phone. It's not, it doesn't even have a SIM card installed. I just literally need the phone with the apps for different accounts because it's easier to upload the media. Yes, you can do some of it through the web and stuff, but it's a pain in the butt. It's way easier to do it through the native application. So I was like, this might actually work. And so far, so good. There are some challenges I need to overcome as far as just workflow stuff, but I'm hoping that sometime in the next couple of months that I could have not only my personal device but also my work device all running Graphene OS. That also makes my life easier too, from like a just a like everyday. It's sometimes difficult switching back and forth from all these different ecosystems and platforms and stuff, and it makes me fairly savvy whipping around Mac OS versus, say, Linux. I don't have any Windows environment. I have a Windows gaming laptop on a shelf that I use for when I travel. And in the odd scenario where a client says, hey, for whatever reason, when we're looking at this landing page in Edge, it doesn't look right or something, typically I use browser extensions to view those, because you can change the user agent. But just for the sake of, you know, everything, I usually can go fire up a Windows machine. There's usually like a year of updates I need to apply, but I can at least try to replicate the problem. Otherwise, I don't really use Windows at all. I haven't in a long time. I'm pretty much straight up Mac OS and then Linux for everything else. So trying to get a little more consistency in my life this year and have less chaos, though one could argue I might be introducing more chaos into my life by making my life difficult by trying to do what I'm doing. But the reason why I'm sharing is because I know a lot of people out there struggle with if your work life blends with your personal life and you do certain things on your phone, because your phone is a business tool. It's not just a personal cell phone. It's a business tool. A privacy and security may come second or third place to what you need to do to conduct business. And that's like buying plane tickets and ordering Ubers and email and sharing, you know, you might have to share files and have Dropbox or Google Drive and all these different things, Microsoft Teams or whatever the case may be. There's so many different apps that that are used in corporate environments and business environments that they just don't always play well on something like a Graphene OS phone or your contacts or on your Nextcloud server and all. I mean, that works really well for a personal wise, but sometimes in a business scenario, it can be very challenging. So I'm trying to go through the chaos and tell you about it so you can decide if it's something you want to try for yourself. Because I will tell you, the best way to approach these types of things is just take your time and plan it out. It's also good to like write things down, take note inventory of like if you're using your device for work as well as personal, maybe look at all the applications that you like, keep note like through the whole week. Oh, okay. I use 3CX. Okay. 3CX. I also use, I don't know, Microsoft Teams. Let's say Microsoft Teams. Maybe use Zoom. Maybe use Outlook or Office 365, or you have a Google Workspace account, you use the Gmail app, or maybe you use the native mail app, whatever, right? You kind of just take an inventory of all the things you need. And then what you can do is if you have a Pixel, and if not, you can buy them on secondhand markets, especially like the Pixel 6 and 7s and 8s. They're usually, I mean, I just replaced a Pixel for my sister. It was a used 6 for, I think, like $149, right? And it's still a fair amount of money, but it's also not a lot of money for a phone in the phone context, where phones are often over $1,000 these days. So buy yourself a Pixel and don't try to switch your SIM card over or anything like that just yet. Just set it up and try to look, because most of the time your phone will work just fine, right, on Wi-Fi. Load up all the apps in your owner profile and then set up a work profile on that device. Once you have all the apps installed, what you're going to do is you're going to go to settings, and then you're going to go to your system menu. And then from system, you're going to go into users, and then you're going to select a user account. So let's say it's your work profile. Then what you can do is there's an option that says install available apps. So all the applications you've installed in your owner profile are in this menu. And now you can just go and tick the slider for every app that you need for that work profile. Or maybe it's your personal profile. Maybe it's a shitposting profile. Whatever you want to do. Then you can switch to that user profile. These apps will show up and they will not have any logins, right? So even if you did log in on another profile, it's like having a whole new app installed. There's no sharing of user data or application data between these. They're all isolated, which makes this awesome, because for me, I can have client profiles set up and then have them isolated from each other. And I also don't have to worry about like the app accidentally trying to access a storage scope or contacts that I don't want, because there aren't any in that profile. All I need it for is to do usually three or four different things, and that's it. So it's almost kind of like having like multiple phones in one. And that is super cool. It's also cool if you have younger kids and they like to play with your phone. Maybe you have a 3 or 4 or 5, 6 year old, and maybe they have a couple games you like to play on your phone. Cool. Well, if you're running, and you can also do this, I think, on stock Android. I actually haven't used stock Android in a very long time, but I'm pretty sure it also has user profiles. But the cool thing is, like, let's say you're running Graphene OS, you're in your daily, you can set up a user profile for your child. You can tell that profile it does not have access to SMS or phone calls, so they can't accidentally make phone calls or text anyone. You can specify which apps they can use. So maybe you just have like a couple games, but you don't want them installing anything. They wouldn't have access to do that anyways, unless you installed Google Play services into that profile and allowed, you know, the apps to be installed on the profile. Everything's in the owner profile, right? So you can then just hand the phone to the kid and let them play their game, or maybe you have some learning apps on there for, you know, math or for vocabulary or something like that. But then you can kind of have this peace of mind knowing like the kid's not going to do anything nefarious, accidental, or whatever. They really can't. It's very isolated. So a lot of people will look at like, oh, Graphene OS sounds like it's like really challenging. It's actually not. It is just regular Android. It's just an Android phone. All we're doing is we're trying to isolate our identity, from the phone as much as possible, or as much as we want to. So it's de-Googled in the sense there are no Google services on the device unless you install them or use them in a way that you want to. So traditionally, you buy a phone, whether it's an iPhone or any Android device. The very first thing you do is set up your account by logging into it, either with an Apple ID or you create one, or a Gmail account, like a Google account. It might be Gmail, it might be a Google Workspace account, but regardless, it's a Google account. So from the very moment you set this phone up, you're already logged into it, and now that service on the other end, it's making all these calls, it's telling all this information about you. It's, you know, you're basically KYCing yourself to the phone from the very moment you get it. So having a brand new Pixel with, especially if you can buy it, have like a friend buy it for you and it disassociate the purchase of the EIN from you, it's even better, or have someone else buy it or buy it secondhand, is it gives you the ability to really start fresh and kind of control the environment the way you want to. Now, there are some things that, you know, might be easier than others. Like if you are trying to manage your contacts and things of that nature, but there are some really good services out there that are really easy to use and set up. And I'll probably just put a link to Josh's YouTube channel, because his latest setup with how he's managing his contacts and calendar and tasks is actually really cool. I personally use Nextcloud. I have my own Nextcloud server. Actually, I have a couple of them. So all of my contacts and my calendar, my tasks and my backups all go directly to my Nextcloud server. But not everyone has that, and I understand that. And the thing is, you don't even really need that to do this. There's easier ways to manage this. It's just that I've been doing this, and this is how I've had my setup for probably the last 3, 4, or 5 years now. And so this is just what works for me. But it's getting a lot easier is kind of what I'm saying. So there are some new things. Well, not new things. There's a fairly new marketplace I wanted to talk about. And it's actually kind of been around for a while, but it's finally starting to get some traction. Because another question I get from a lot of people is, well, and this comes up in our group chats a lot, in the chat, main chat, is how do I get Monero, right? If you want to use Monero to purchase things online to, again, break the identity linkability to yourself, how do you get Monero? It's getting a lot harder because Monero has been delisted from a lot of the big exchanges. Wonder why? Well, because it's probably the most anonymous cryptocurrency that we can use today. I wouldn't say it's the most, but in my opinion, it's the best. It's the best, it's most widely used, accepted, and understood as protecting your privacy as far as your transactions online. Whereas Bitcoin and other blockchains are very transparent, and there's a lot of regulation, which is making it even more difficult to try to do things with Bitcoin online without leaving breadcrumbs that lead right back to your front door. So I was thinking about it, and I'm like, why don't I actually look at using XMR Bazaar? XMRBazaar.com is kind of like eBay, but with Monero. And you know, people sell all sorts of stuff on here. I'm actually on the website right now, so I'm looking at memory like RAM. There's services, all sorts of different product, hard drives. There's a process, micro CPU. There's a lot of different items, and it's kind of slowly growing. Holy cow, XMR, one XMR is $193.28 right now. That's awesome. So maybe consider selling stuff you don't use anymore. Sell it on a marketplace for Monero. And then now you have Monero and you got rid of some junk and there was no KYC transaction in between. I'm not going to get too much into the whole KYC stuff and everything because I do often. I'm just talking about some ideas that I have that I'm going to experiment. So I'm going to try to sell some stuff on XMR Bazaar. Because I have a lot of stuff, not a lot, but I have some things that I need to purge, jettison out of my life. Old devices, I don't even know. I got stuff that I keep looking and going like, gosh, I really should sell that old laptop. I should sell that old phone. I got these Xbox controller, you know, things where I'm just like, it's just junk. It's not really junk, but it's just taking up space. I don't use it. So I'm going to try to sell some stuff on here. I'm going to talk about my experience. But the next thing you might be saying is, well, what do I do with the XMR? What do I do with Monero? Great question. So I was going to talk about a few things that I use Monero for. One is if you ever wanted to have your own domain name, and I suggest many people have their own domain. We're talking about like a website URL. For those that don't know, domain name is like anything .com, .net, whatever. And oftentimes you want to purchase that with Monero. And there are websites like Namecheap and Porkbun and other domain registrars where you can fire up an email alias. Okay, so go to Simple Login or whatever email alias platform or tool you have. I think even ProtonMail has email aliasing, Tutanota does. There's other ones. So just create an email alias. So you go to Namecheap.com, create a new account, right? Hopefully you're on a VPN or you're using Tor. Okay, rule number one, use Tor or use a VPN or public Wi-Fi somewhere. And then go ahead and create your email alias and then create a password from your password manager, either KeePass or Bitwarden or whatever you're using. Cool. Okay. So now you're logged into that account. You find a domain you want to buy. You buy it and you pay for it with Monero. Done. And now there's no linkability from owning that domain back to the actual physical person who owns it. So you just created some barriers there. So it at least makes it far more difficult to look up who owns that domain. you might want to use that domain to register your own email service with, say, Proton or Tutanota, whoever. And then the cool thing is you can also connect that to Simple Login. And now you can create infinite amounts of email aliases that are all tied to a domain that you control. Fantastic. And you did it all with Monero. Awesome. So one example, maybe you want to have a cell phone. Like maybe you bought a Pixel, flash Graphene OS on it. Maybe you did this at a public Wi-Fi like Starbucks or something and you install Tor. And now you want to activate it. So you need a SIM card. So maybe you go to Silentlink and you buy an eSIM and you pay for it with Monero. And now you can download and install Signal and you have a phone that can make and receive phone calls, has data on it, and there's no KYC tied to the phone. Why might you want that? I don't know. It doesn't matter why. But that's how this is how Monero is used in a circular economy. So you can sell things, can also look at consider purchasing something through a meet intermediary like a non-shop. I had an episode where I talked about buying a new IBM ThinkPad using a non-shop where I just basically placed an order, gave them the URL for the Amazon link that I wanted. I specified the Amazon locker of where I wanted it delivered to. They don't even ask for your email. They don't really know who you are. What they do is they generate a code for you, like a seed phrase. You just have to come back to the website once a day, put it in, and just check on your order status. There is no notifications because they don't have a way to notify you. So you can, if you have Monero now, you could buy your Pixel, boom, through that intermediary, have it delivered to a storage locker, put on that mask, put on a hoodie, look like a total gangster, although with the whole Luigi Mangione thing, I don't know if I might do that. But if you don't want your face picked up on the cameras, you know, you can go and pick up your phone, go to a local coffee shop, flash Graphene OS onto it from your laptop, and now, you know, you can set it up with Tutamail tied to your own domain that you paid for with Monero. Like, this is the whole thing, like trying to, you got to practice this stuff, right? And there's 1,000 other scenarios. These are just scenarios that are running through my head, and this is what I use it for. And I want to dispel this myth that only criminals and money launderers and drug lords and human traffickers use Tor and use cryptocurrency. No, it's not the case. It's basically just a great way to be able to live your life, exercise your freedoms without the total surveillance over every action and transaction that you make. And that's what it is. And if you don't practice some of these things, it doesn't have to be what I'm talking about specifically, but I'm just saying if you're not putting into practice using your voice, voicing your thoughts, participating in circular economies, whether it's barter, whether it's cryptocurrency, then we just kind of lose over time. And these things just kind of slip away because we need the demand to be there for the developers to develop these awesome projects that we all get to use. And you know, I'm always thinking about the longevity of Graphene OS. I'm like, oh my gosh, I hope, you know, somehow Google doesn't put the screws to them sometime in the next year or two. Because yeah, there are some other projects that are okay that I would consider, maybe like Calyx OS or Lineage OS or something. But it's the best, man. Graphene OS is the absolute best mobile operating system out there. It's not 100% perfect. Nothing ever is, but it's progress. It's major, major progress over all of the other options that I have available to me. So I get really excited for trying these things out, not because I'm some sort of secret agent, man. I'm just a regular guy like everyone else who cuts my grass. Well, not right now, it's wintertime, but you know, cuts my grass on the weekends and has chores and responsibilities and things I need to take care of. But there's so many of us feel like there's things in our life that are just kind of dictated. And these are areas where you can take that back. And you can say, no, I'm not going to participate in that. I'm not going to do that this way. And so the things that you can't control, you should try to control, or if it's important to you, you know. And so that's what I'm trying to do is lay out the blueprint. So anyways, that's kind of, you know, that's kind of the couple things that I'm going to be doing, as well as some other things, projects I'm going to be working on for myself this year with extending out my current self-hosting environment with utilizing Proxmox to manage like all my virtual servers to simplify that. I don't know if I'm actually complicating or simplifying, but I will keep you in the loop on how that goes. Unintelligent Seven's always like really, you know, nudging me, being like, man, you can do it. You got this. And then I watch videos on Proxmox and I'm like, I don't know. It seems kind of heavy, but that's one of the things that I want to tackle, as well as some that because that will allow me to have easy deployable environment or an easy environment to deploy things that I want to try. So like paperless, is it called paperless NG? I really want that, where I can scan all my receipts and documents. It'll OCR, it's all stored locally, and it makes a searchable index that is controlled by me of all my stuff that I need to find sometimes. So important documents is what we'll say. So that's one of the things I really want. I also want to get my home assistant working smoothly. It's kind of working. I'm using the open source home assistant running on my Umbral server. Actually, is it on my Umbral or Casa OS? I can't remember. I don't know. It's actually on Casa OS right now. But I want to experiment with more homebrew servers. So that's my goal. Eventually get, you know, my work device migrated to Graphene OS. We'll see. I feel like I've got maybe a 25% success rate for that happening, but we're going to try. And then also beefing up my home lab, my home servers, and doing more hosting and making things easier to find and share, like using PhotoPrism, using paperless NG. It's either NG or NX. It's one or the other. I'm sure I'll be corrected. So yes. Anyways, I wanted to just touch on a couple of different things. I was going to. There's been a lot of news. If you haven't heard of what Salt Typhoon is this nation state hacking group based out of China, allegedly, that has been somewhat embedded into our phone infrastructure, like Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile, and some other telcos, for an unknowing amount of time. And they were able to access these networks through backdoors that have been implemented because of extenuating circumstances by the government, hence the Patriot Act, and has kind of backfired. And even a few weeks ago, the Hated One put out a video on it. CISA, which I always forget what it stands for. I think it's like the cyber something monitoring agency in America, was recommending everyone use end-to-end encrypted applications like Signal, which we find hilarious. But it was that severe because of text message databases were potentially at risk for being surveilled and exported to unknown locations. So anyways, apparently AT&T and Verizon said their networks are secure now. This happens all the time, right? It's like, oh no, we're good now. We're secure now. That clip I played earlier at the beginning of the episode of Apple, right? It's like settling. I don't know. You know, they're settling in this class action lawsuit. I think it is a class action lawsuit. It is a class action lawsuit for like $95 million. This started 5 years ago because, you know, people were suspecting that they were getting ads targeted at them after using Hey Siri searches, or Hey Siri was being inadvertently activated. So they surmised that Apple must have been storing those voice recordings and selling them to third parties, because immediately, I don't know if it was immediately, but they're immediately being targeted for ads after discussing something. Some of these things were quite private or, you know, kind of sensitive. And so Apple has decided to settle the lawsuit for $95 million, which they're not admitting guilt. Who knows? It's the whole trust me, bro thing is what I'm trying to get to. Apple, AT&T, Verizon, the government, trust me, bro, everything's secure, everything's good, everything's private. Just don't worry about it. Just don't look over here, look over there, right? And so that's why I've mentioned in the past, and probably ad nauseum at different points, where it's like, I just assume everything is always going to be compromised. So the things that really need to be private or that if you have sensitive information, should just not be transmitted through these telcos and should not be stored in databases that are not protected by the Fourth Amendment, at least in the United States. They're not in your possession, not your keys, not your Bitcoin, right? So if it's not data living on a hard drive in a server in your house, it's not yours. The third party doctrine says so. And so that's why I kind of live under this assumption that everything's going to be breached at some point. So this is why we use email aliases. This is why we use unique passwords for every single login. Because if there's a breach at Starbucks and you use the Starbucks app or whatever, and you're using x105327starbucks1.simplelogin.com and a unique password, guess what? You're not really at that much risk. You're really not. Yes, if someone had that username and password, they could log into your Starbucks account only, but you're not using that login anywhere else, nowhere else. So that's when we really try to focus on isolation from providers and service providers, account logins, banks, keeping those things separate and not reusing email addresses if you can help it, and definitely not reusing passwords. Unique passwords all the time. Password manager should be like the number one thing. If there's anything you ever take away from anything I ever say, let it be a password manager. I don't care if you use Apple iPhone. I don't care if you use a Google Android. But if you use a password manager, this is where you're securing the long-term blowback you could possibly avoid if you were using the same username and password all over the place. And then there's a data breach and now someone's like took all the money out of your PayPal account. So that's what the security side is. So you're securing your life by mixing up all your logins with having unique email addresses if you can, but at a very bare minimum, use unique passwords. Use a password manager. KeePass is a great one if you want to store it locally. If you want to use something that's cloud-based, I would recommend Bitwarden. That's what I use. I use them both and have used them both for a long time. But if you ever decide you want to self-host, you can set up your own Vault Warden server at your house, and therefore it makes it very easy to transition over from a hosted password manager with Bitwarden to a self-hosted one where now you are running your backend. Just make sure you have backups, because with great power comes great responsibility. So, I'm not really sure what to make of all that. I'm sure nobody else does really either, because I'm pretty sure we're not getting any straight answers on the whole Salt Typhoon data breach hacks and how long they were living in these networks, what kind of information they actually were able to monitor and steal and whatever. So again, operate as if these things will happen regardless. Moving on to safing.io. I've talked about safing. The application is called Portmaster, which is only available on Linux and Windows, I believe. And it's basically a piece of software that allows you to route traffic for every application or connection that your computer would make to different servers around the globe. So kind of think about it is, rather than having just one VPN where all your traffic is going through to one server and then going out to make the request to the internet, every application you open makes its own VPN connection, making it far more difficult to surveil and track and do packet monitoring and stuff, because it's like you're having like 20 VPNs running or 30 VPNs running, depending upon how you have your Portmaster application configured. So they put out a video, and there's a blog post on the safing.io website that I'll have links to both, where they talk about Portmaster, which what they call the SPN, which is their, instead of VPN, it's SPN. SPN, I forget what the acronym stands for, but essentially that's the technology that allows each application to have its own separate, unique connection to a server. That's basically its own VPN. Apparently, Portmaster and SPN will remain open source. So the first thought was, oh gosh, okay, they're acquiring Safing.io, is there going to be changes to this? IVPN has a long history, a pretty solid history of really focusing on those and who care about privacy regards to like their VPN software, and they've been around a long time. I think I posted a screenshot the other day where my iVPN account I think I've had since 2009. I think it was 2009 or 8. Definitely since 2009. So we're talking, I personally have had and used them for 15 years now, almost 16 years this year. Wow, so time is going by quick. So they have no plans to change the business model, pricing, or policies that would present any disadvantage that I've seen. Though we're also seeing a lot of companies kind of consume each other within the privacy space. So like Proton scooping up simple login and things of this nature. I'm like, not all of this stuff is necessarily bad, but sometimes I start to get nervous because I take a lot, I put a lot of effort into keeping my eggs spread in different baskets and not relying on, say, like one or two companies to manage all my email and VPNs and technology and contacts and all that stuff. I like to use different service providers for one specific thing. And sometimes, yes, that's not as convenient, but it makes me feel like I'm putting less at risk or I'm less vulnerable to some sort of, I don't know, shenanigans that are taking place that we didn't expect, or a change within their terms of service or privacy policy that catches off guard. So I don't know. We'll see how this goes. It's not really huge news, but I don't think there's a ton of people out there that use Portmaster besides me, because every time I talk about it, people are always like, what? What's that? And I've been using it now for a couple of years, and I actually think it's gotten better. It's gotten much more stable. I run it on my Linux laptop, which is currently running Pop OS on my Oryx Pro, and it works great. I have had problems in the past, but they've definitely refined the software and it's gotten much, much better. So I know that there's other voices out there who will say, oh, it's probably NSA spyware and, you know, this kind of thing, which, okay, people can say whatever they want, but it is open source. The code is available, and it's easier to say those things about software where that we don't have access to the source code. So I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'm just getting taken by the feds. You know, who knows? I want to make a mention. There's a video I'm going to post about Discord. And I know Discord is a sensitive topic because a lot of us don't like it, but some of us use it anyways because you kind of have to, because there might be some sort of projects that you're contributing to or that you want to monitor. Perfect example, GrapheneOS uses Discord, which pains me to no end. Yes, they pipe their stuff over via Bridge to their Matrix channels. You don't have to use Discord, but there's other projects that also use Discord, which always befuddles me. So the reason why I'm talking about Discord is it's fairly popular, and now they're asking users, not everyone, but there are now more interactions with people who are posting screenshots and recordings where they're being asked to verify their age using AI and facial recognition, which is, okay, interesting. So we're seeing this already, at least in the United States. I think there's like 13 or 17 states that are now actually filtering websites. We're seeing this being proposed with COSA. We're seeing this being proposed with things like TikTok and other social media applications where to enforce age restrictions, meaning restricting kids from using the platform, they're going to force everyone that wants to use the platform to literally upload a picture of yourself with your ID, holding your ID, or do a face scan, or take a photo and upload it. And I think this is going to continue to be a trend, unfortunately, from here on out. I think that we're going to see in the next probably 2 years, it'll start to feel normal to run across using a service or signing up for something that wants you to upload your ID. And I, for one, will avoid that as much as I can, because we already see what happens. You have companies, these Fortune 50, Fortune 100 companies that spend millions of dollars on cybersecurity, but yet can't, you know, keep their networks from getting breached and their data from getting breached. So all the time we're seeing news reports of, I don't even bother talking about data breaches anymore. If you want to follow data breaches, I'd suggest going over and checking out the surveillance report So that's run by Henry from Tech Lore and The New Oil. And they do, I think it's a weekly or biweekly podcast called Surveillance Report. And all they do is they cover things like tech news as it relates to data breaches and how it impacts privacy. Because there's so many that I wouldn't, it'd be boring. It's boring to talk about it, honestly. Like I said, just assume everything's going to be breached. So assuming that, why would you want to upload pictures of yourself with your ID when you don't know how it's being stored? You don't know how long it's going to be retained, who has access to it, and how long it'll be before it gets leaked out. It's just going to happen. So we need to come up with better ways to do verifications than do something that is basically doxing every single user from this moment they sign up, excuse me, for the service. So yeah, I'll have a link. You can go watch the video. It's kind of interesting. I forget who it's by. It's by some YouTuber. I can't remember off the top of my head. And he just kind of goes through showing how... no, that's my FBI meme. Yeah, so I wasn't... Oh, here it is. Okay, here it is. I actually did have the tab up, and it's by No Text to Speech. 1.16 million subscribers. That's a pretty big YouTube channel. So anyway, they did a pretty good... I thought they did a really good 9-minute video, 10-minute video here on... seeing the screenshots and videos of Discord actually doing the check your age verification process. So going into age verification, I put some notes together about COSA. COSA is the Kids Online Safety Act, and there's been some updates they've made to it. This is still a thing that may or may not pass depending upon, I don't know, it seems like more people want this than don't because of the way it's being sold. And it's being sold under protecting children online by implementing safety measures for platforms used by minors. So they want to regulate the design features and content recommendations to prevent harm to children is what they're saying. And introducing a transparent and, you know, transparency and parental tools for monitoring children's online activities, which I'm all for. Parenting. I think kids should already be parenting and monitoring their children's online activities. I know it gets harder. Kids are smart. Kids are savvy and they're slick. They think they can get away with everything. They often do get away with a lot. But where this bothers me is the whole duty of care, right? So the duty of care is falling back to the platforms. So they're saying platforms must mitigate harms such as mental health disorders, compulsive use, cyberbullying, exploitation of minors, and putting in safeguards for minors. So this is like the government saying the duty of care falls on the platform, which I'm like, what? Why not does the duty of care not fall to the parent? Yeah. So right off the rip, these updates, I'm having problems. Like I don't understand how we got here. So they said, platforms must mitigate harms such as mental health. Yeah, okay, I read all that. So the platforms must provide, okay, this is what they're saying, and they define platform based upon user base and revenue. And so what they're saying is tools for parents to monitor usage should be options for limiting engagement-driven features, as in like autoplay or infinite scrolling. There should be default protective settings for minor accounts, and reporting mechanisms for harms, which I'm all for reporting mechanisms. Absolutely. No problems with that. It's just the duty should still fall on the parent. And the parents, I'm sorry, phones are set up now to where you can easily set up the phone for kids, not let them download apps unless you're putting in the passwords and stuff. So a lot of these parents are just giving them a phone and just letting them go wild. And to me, that's where the problem starts. They're saying the platform must disclose risks and safety measures annually and provide detailed reports on the minors of the time minors spend on platforms and exposure to harmful content. So they're also saying they need to have like studies on the impact of online platforms on minors, which I mean, there's been studies on it, you know, so now it's putting the onerous, the financial burden on the platforms to now do all this. Like, first of all, just don't let kids register on your platform. This is going to get far too expensive. Kids aren't buying stuff anyways, if that's what you're trying to do, sell junk to people. So they need to pay for studies now too. And, you know, and have all these tools they need to build for the parents and all this stuff. So they're also saying the platforms must inform users about algorithmic content recommendations. I don't know what that means, like how they would inform them about algorithmic changes. Algorithms are generally a very safeguarded secret in most companies. So I don't know what that means to inform them, just saying, hey, we made an update, we made a change. I don't really know. Then they're also putting enforcement into this. So the Federal Trade Commission and state attorneys can enforce compliance. So they're going to be, you know, probably doing this with fines or other things, violations treated as deceptive or unfair practices. So with the age verification, they want a study and implement a feasible methods for verifying age at the device or system level. So some of the concerns and criticisms are related to the mandatory age verification, where it requires the platform to verify the user's age, likely leading to an increased collection of the personal data, like I mentioned, creating risks for data breaches and misuse of sensitive information, like employees that work there who has access to this, and then just the sheer amount of increased data collection in general. So platforms may need to collect and store more of it to comply, contrary to privacy principles for minimizing data collection, because generally we want it to be like something happened, it's verified, and now you can get rid of it. Like, you don't need to keep it forever. So, you know, the surveillance risks that we're looking at are parental tools and reporting mechanisms may inadvertently promote surveillance of minors' activities, as well as content filtering for free speech, because they'll start with something, right? What's defined as harmful, or what's defined as, you know, questionable. Could that be someone talking about a book review? Could it be depends on the book, right? Or a podcast? I mean, what exactly are the definitions of harmful? Because people will come up with different versions of what harmful is. And then from there, the platforms may over-censor the content to avoid the liability, which is more likely the case, impacting free speech for both minors and adults, and then putting in, you know, new barriers for smaller platforms as well that can't really, you know, afford the compliance costs for the transparency reports and all the safeguards, and disproportionately impacting these smaller platforms, essentially reducing the competition. So it's going to make it much more expensive for companies to come in and challenge some of the old guard, if you will. So that's kind of another con. And, you know, what this means for online privacy. So we're talking about massive overreach and data requirements. So platforms are, you know, compelled to implement systems for monitoring and managing minors' activities, requiring data on user behavior, preferences, age. There's the chilling effects, right? The bill incentivizes platforms to aggressively moderate content, potentially suppressing lawful and valuable discussions. And then it also provides weak anonymity, which is a word I cannot say, mandating like age verification, and undermines the anonymity, cornerstone of all online privacy and safety groups, you know, that we're all promoting all the time. So, you know, this is going to create some sort of centralized system for verifying and monitoring ages. And this could be exploited. It could be exploited by malicious actors or even governments. So this is all, these are updates that are in the bill, section 108. This is the age verification study report. And I'll have a link to the bill. And this, again, this is in the United States. So this will, I'll have a link to it where you can go read the text. And I was just summarizing it, because it's all broken out by like section 108, section A, B, you know, B1, 2, 3, 4. So it kind of breaks it down. The effective date is, except as otherwise provided in the title, this title shall take effect on the date that is 18 months after the date of enactment of this act. So if this passes, it looks like they'll have a year and a half to get in compliance or face whatever penalties. So this is a bit dry content, but it's really important. And I'm trying to stay on top of the things that have been lingering, like a hanging chad, for quite some time. And there is a great review of this by some ordinary gamers, Mudahar on YouTube. I love his channel, and he's also uses Arch, by the way. So I dig his content. But he had a pretty good breakdown of this and kind of just eloquently expressed the concerns that I have and others have and why these things are bad. And these laws, if they pass, become a precedent for other countries to follow suit, but also sets a precedent to continue this type of behavior in other ways that will stifle innovation, stifle development, and potentially stifle free speech while also exposing potentially millions of people's data, which also includes pictures of their IDs and things of that nature. And it's just it's just not good. I was actually reading an article about money laundering that I'll have a link to because it was pretty good. But anyways, it was on The Rage. Do I have that up? It's about the travel rules in the EU and how anything over €1,000, whether it's a self-custodial wallet or another user's wallet or a custodial wallet, has to be KYC'd with ID. So we're seeing this in other parts of the world as well. The European Union, they're implementing this for this, what they call the travel rule. And these types of travel rules have existed in other countries for quite some time, going back to like 2009, 2012. And this is all anti-money laundering thing. So I'm kind of switched gears real quick from COSA over to this 2025 EU travel rule. But they're kind of, the end result is the same, KYCing yourself and exposing your personal identification and it being uploaded, recorded, or uploaded and stored outside your purview, not knowing who has access to it or how long it'll be stored before it gets destroyed. Most of these things just need to happen for the moment, and then it can go away. But these things are usually stored for indefinite periods of time and then also used to create other links to other activities and other systems. So that's, you know, that's a trend. We're seeing this as a trend, and I'm trying to keep a pulse on it so that we can kind of understand what we're probably going to be seeing, what to expect in the next, you know, coming years as it relates to transacting through Bitcoin or Lightning or cryptocurrency or exchanges, or as it even pertains to signing up for social media accounts or any kind of account. Most of us privacy freaks are kind of out of using the social media stuff, but that doesn't mean everyone is, and it doesn't mean our friends and family aren't, and how this can impact them. So it's important to kind of be aware of these things so you can intelligently provide a reason of why they should just nuke their social media to begin with, because no one has ever said my life is so much better now that I'm on social media, ever. If anything, it's the opposite. You know, every single one of us knows somebody who's like, oh yeah, I deleted my Facebook back in like 2009. It's the best thing I ever did. Or 2012 or 2015. Or I nuked my Instagram account back in 2017. Best thing I ever did. No one ever says, yeah, the best thing I ever did was sign up for Instagram. Said no one ever. So, yeah, you know, we're all trying to find what works for us. And I also kind of wanted to just throw this out there through the holidays and everything. There's a lot of conversations that come up around these things. If they know that you're into this stuff, right? Using self-hosted stuff and email aliasing and cryptocurrency and GrapheneOS or Linux and all these different things to basically choose when and how you want to share your information and who you want to share that with in your life. That's really what it is. It's not about being invisible. I don't do these things to be invisible. I'm not invisible. I'm a real person in the world. I have a mortgage. I have a business. I have things. I have cars that are registered. It's not like I'm trying to live in a cabin in the mountains, although that would be awesome. I'm not against that. I'm just saying that's not where I'm at in my life right now. And I would imagine a lot of you aren't either. And so I see like these conversations. We talk a lot about, you know, being anonymous. And the goal isn't to be anonymous for the sake of it, for being invisible, okay? It's putting into practice all of these different things so that we get to choose when we're exposing ourselves. And that sounded kind of dirty. We choose what we want to share and with whom. So You don't need to give it to Best Buy. You don't need to give it to your grocery store. They don't need your phone number. Oh, let me get your phone number. Let me get your phone number. Every time you check out somewhere, that's what they ask. What's your phone number? What's your phone number? F you. That's my phone number. Ring up my stuff. I'm going to pay in cash and get out of here. Right? That's why we all get so frustrated, is because it's just, there's this massive overreach that everyone's been conditioned to in a lot of the Western countries, a lot of the Western part of the world, where, you know, everything's, contactless payment and give me your ID, give me your phone number, give me all your stuff. It's like, screw you. I'm not giving you anything. I'm here to conduct business. If you want my money, take my money. I'll take the product. Otherwise, I do not comply with your policy. And that's what this is. It's like, not that I want to be invisible. I don't want to expose all of my personal identity and data to people who don't care about it, number one, and will only use it to monetize it and to sell it and bundle it and all these other things that they're going to do. So it's putting into practice your own, building your own guardrails around your personal identity in real life and online. And so choosing when and when you share that and who you share it with. Right? Some things are not a choice, right? Like banking and stuff. Some things are a little bit more challenging than others, but you surely don't need to give it to every Tom, Dick, and Harry around town just because you want to buy a set of tires or get an oil change or buy, some widget from the electronics store like Best Buy. I mean, heck, even going to restaurants, they're trying to get you. If you've ever noticed, like, oh, we'll get your number. It's a 10-minute wait, 15-minute wait, whatever. We'll get your number and send you a text. Right? Oh, yeah, sure. That sounds great. They used to give out those little buzzer coasters like with the lights on them, and now a lot of them have moved to this phone number system. So for me, I'm like, I know that this is going to happen. And that's why I'm always prepared with a throwaway my pseudo number on my phone. Right? There's other apps and other services out there you can use to generate voice over IP numbers. Maybe you just have a Google Voice number registered to an email address that you never use for anything. It's just spam, right? And maybe you cycle it out. These are the things, because that number will go into their open table or reservation system or whatever, wherever it's going, and it'll get sold. And they'll say, oh, this is where they ate, this is what he had, and all this kind of stuff. I don't get anything back for that. Am I going to get a free meal if they give you my phone number? Because maybe I would consider it. What's the value proposition here? And that's what I want everyone to think about. Keep it in the back of your head. You're the one in control. And it's like, there's this assumption that companies are like, oh yeah, you're just going to give it to us because we ask you. And we're going to sell you something and take your money. And then we're going to sell you out as soon as you walk out that door by selling your information or using it for marketing purposes internally. Either which way, I didn't give permission to that. I didn't opt into that. And so that's what it's about. So it kind of forces us to be extreme. So we're an hour and 17 minutes. I don't want to go too long on this episode because I am also going to try to get episodes out at a higher frequency. That's part of my 2025 objectives. I'm not going to tell you what the schedule is because I don't want you to hold me to it and then like light me up because I didn't get it out. But I'm going to try to be much better about actually scheduling things out, which means I'll try to keep things a little shorter and higher frequency. So with that, thank you all for listening. I hope this was hopefully informative and entertaining in some level. And I hope that you're doing well in your journey. I hope you're doing well in your life. And come by the chat room, say hi, introduce yourself. If you're already in there, throw me a thumbs up once you hear this and let me know how you're doing. And we will catch you in episode 42. On the next one. Until then, hope you all doing fantastic. Oh yeah, whoa, look, they can never keep me down. I'm going, and if I ever fail, just know I'll go again. I never quit, cause I know that every loss may lead to another win. I'm going up. I bet when I land, they gon' tell me it's luck again. See that I'm winning, it's harder to watch. I'm setting the stage, you should give me my props. You ain't got a soul, you lacking the spirit.